What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Welcome back to Darren Donica Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Looking forward to this next conversation. We've had some great interviews here this week, and this next one promises to be very good as well. You may have heard Tom Glavine with a good in-depth conversation with Chase a few weeks ago on our game night Facebook Live feature that we've been doing. But he joins us here on the show, and we're excited that we're keeping our fingers crossed that we're going to have the baseball get going later this month. The guy's back at the spring training sites, if you want to call him that. Tom, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. How you guys doing?
We're hanging in there. We're hanging in there. We hope we're inching closer to seeing some games here. And let's start with this, Tom. When I think about you as a pitcher, one of your greatest attributes, of course, was, you know, just taking the ball, you know, for 35 starts year after year after year. This is going to be so unique, you know, for those grinders who really, you know, make their mark with consistency over a long period of time. How would you approach a season like this year where you would make, you know, approximately 12 starts? How would it change how you approach the game?
You know, I think it just changes it in the sense that, you know early on you're going to be limited as to the amount of innings you're going to be able to pitch. And that's just a fact. So, you know, I think your mindset is a little bit different when you know, okay, I've probably got three or four innings in me today versus going out there and thinking about just pitching a game and trying to win a game. How I would go about my business would be the same in terms of preparation and things like that. But I do think there's a little bit different mentality when you take the mound knowing, okay, I'm probably only going to go three or four innings today versus, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try and go as deep into the game as I can, hopefully seven or eight innings. So I just think it's mentally it's just going to be a little bit of an adjustment for guys.
I've read some of what the Braves approach, and this it sounds like a lot of teams might be taking this approach, especially with some young arms that they have that, you know, they're not going to push them too much. But what's your understanding of how they will deploy, you know, some of these guys like Soroka that they have that are on the rise? But, you know, obviously this is a unique year.
Well, I mean, I think on the one hand, sure, you're going to be careful with guys on the front end. But I think for the Braves, or at least a team like the Braves, the shortness of the season – make them not have to worry about those young guys on the back end. You know, I think in a 162-game schedule, you know, you are going to get to a point in September with those younger guys where, yeah, they're going to start getting concerned about innings. In this scenario, obviously, they're not going to have to do that, but they are going to have to be careful with things on the front end. You know, the last thing you want to start doing is overextending guys early. Because let's face it, you got a pitcher that gets hurt and he goes on the 14-day DL. Well, you've just missed a big chunk of the season. So you certainly don't want to do that. But I think that initially you're going to see guys go out there, probably go three or four innings, you know, 45 to 50, 60 pitches somewhere in there early on. And then I think each time, similar to what you would probably see in spring training, You probably extend the guy by 15 or 20 pitches each time he goes out. And then after about three or four starts, you probably take the reins off and just let guys go. But obviously on the front end, yeah, you want to be careful that, you know, you're not extending a guy too much. I mean, I think the difficult things are going to be, you know, if you start getting into situations where some of your starters early on get, you know, maybe into an inning and, you know, they got two outs and a runner on, and you really want to try and milk them through an inning and not have to waste, you know, bring a reliever in for one out in an inning. And then the next thing you know, the next guy gets on, and now you're trying to milk one more out again. And, you know, that's how you get into situations where you can certainly overextend guys. So I think managers are going to be really cautious about that kind of stuff.
Tom Glavine is with us. And, Tom, I listened to a discussion that Jason Stark was leading on his podcast about how the starting pitcher over the years has been a little bit de-emphasized. And now you have, you know, some extreme situations where a team might start a reliever just for an inning or two and then flip it and have more of a committee approach. And they were talking about ways that maybe you could, you know, get some more value on the starting pitcher. So we have those great matchups, Tom Glavine against Doug Drabek. You know, when you look in the newspaper of, you know, who the starting pitchers were, That was exciting. It's been de-emphasized some. It's still an extremely important facet of the game. But is there anything that could be done to maybe increase that aspect of the game?
Yeah, put more of an emphasis on starting pitchers getting better and having to pitch deeper into ball games. It's that simple. You know, I think every generation there have been changes in how that generation has been brought up to play the game, so to speak. You know, I know even in my generation, you know, we were, you know, making 35 starts a year. We were pitching 200 and something innings a year and you know, all that stuff. But to the generation before us, that wasn't enough. You know, those guys were in four-man rotations, making 40 starts a year, pitching 300 something innings a year. There was no pitch count. So, you know, to me, the what you're getting out of your pitchers is what you're asking of them, right? So I was brought up in an era where we had five-man rotations, we had pitch counts, and we had those limitations, so to speak. I think the limitations have gotten even more stringent on today's pitchers. You know, guys don't make 35 starts anymore. You don't have too many guys going 200 innings anymore. Guys don't go deep into the game anymore, you know, because they're being told they can't flip a lineup for the third time. And my question is always, well, why not? You know, what are you doing at the minor league level to teach these guys to do that? And I think it's being lost. And it's, you know, so much of, you know, analytics are a good thing. Obviously, you can learn some things from analytics, but I think that's where analytics have gone too far, is that now it's almost automatic that you're not going to let your starting pitcher, you know, go flip a lineup for a third time, pitch in the sixth inning or the seventh inning of a tight ball game. You know, and if you don't allow these guys to do it, then they're never going to do it. They're never going to learn how to do it. So I just think simplistically, you place a greater emphasis on your starting pitchers being able to go deeper into ball games. And you do that at the minor league level. You teach them how to do it. But you know, you can't expect them to not do it at the minor league level, come to the big league level and do it. So, I mean, it's one of those things that I'm not a huge fan of. There are obviously, some great pitchers in baseball, you know, and the Jake DeGroms and Max Scherzers of the world. But, unfortunately it seems like we've gotten to the point where you either have those handful of elite pitchers and then a hodgepodge of mediocrity past those guys. And I think, again, if we could just get to the point where you emphasize the importance of your starting pitcher and your starting pitcher going deep and learning how to flip lineups, learning how to get guys out multiple ways during the course of the game, then you would get more of that at the big league level, but it has to start at the minor league level.
We're talking to Tom Glavine, the Hall of Famer, of course, analyst for the Atlanta Braves as well. So let's talk about the Atlanta Braves in a 60-game season. I mean, we know the young pitchers, we know the veteran pitchers they brought in, and what that lineup looks like. When you read a lot of the experts, obviously people are going to trend towards the Dodgers, and rightfully so. But I feel like the Braves are built for this type of run, and it's going to be more wide open just because of the shorter season. So how do you view the Braves and what that team looks like going into a 60-game season?
I agree with you. I think they're built for this. Because in this scenario, particularly with the way your starting pitchers are going to be limited on the front end of the season, the Braves are built for that because their bullpen was structured that way anyway. You know, you look at the Braves, and I think everybody would tell you their bullpen is going to be a strong point. Now, obviously, if the better their starting pitchers are and take pressure off of their bullpen on a nightly basis, and the better off everybody's going to be. But, you know, this is a team that clearly if they have the lead in the sixth inning, they've got a bullpen that's designed to, okay, here we go, and you're going to run guys out there. And I think in this scenario we're going to see early on, you know, again, they're built for that. You're going to see that. So I think that certainly helps them. I think the delay has allowed Cole Hamels to get healthy, so that's going to be a big thing for them. And like I say, on the back end, you're not going to have to worry about your starting pitchers, particularly the young guys, and an innings load. So I think all those things are certainly positive on the Braves side. Now, are there question marks? Sure. You know, in a situation like this, you know, who knows how anybody's going to react, really, but how are the younger guys going to react to the pressure of knowing, okay, we've only got a 60-game schedule. We can't afford to get off to a bad start. You know, I can't afford to go in a slump as a hitter. I can't afford to go in a slump as a pitcher. It's the kind of thing where you hear this cliche all the time. You know, you're not gonna win the season in a normal season. You're not gonna win the season in the first month of the year, but you sure can take yourself out of it. Well, that's really magnified now in this situation, and you could arguably break it down to, you know, a 10-day or a 2-week drought could take you out of everything. So there's going to be a premium on teams going out and getting off to a good start, and I think from a Braves perspective, it's going to be interesting to see how the younger players on that team react to that pressure of knowing, hey, we got to get out and get off to a hot start.
As a National League pitcher, you spent your entire career in the National League. Obviously, you hit, and that was a part of playing in the NL. So now with the DH being universal, at least for just this year, what are your thoughts on that?
It's twofold. I mean, number one, I understand it for this year. I get it. I think looking further ahead, I think that people are going to have to view this as a trial balloon, because the conversations about a universal DH in baseball are becoming more and more, and I understand that. You know, I would not have liked it as a player. But I have to be honest with you, in today's game, the hitting by the pitchers has gotten so abysmal that I'm probably more open to the conversation now. I mean, there are very few guys in the National League, it seems, as pitchers that really can help themselves with the bat. And when they do, it's painfully obvious that they're able to do those things. And when a guy can't, that's equally painfully obvious. So I just feel like because the hitting – for so many pitchers has gotten so bad that, you know, I'm more open to seeing the DH. You know, I certainly believe the argument that it helps prolong some guys' careers, because you see it in the American League. And we've seen some great hitters, some Hall of Fame hitters, extend their career, as designated hitters. So, I mean, I get all that and I understand that, but I can promise you, if I was playing, I would not have liked it, because I loved hitting. I thought it was a big part of the game. And I always felt like with our teams and our pitchers, the way they handle the bat, we always had an advantage over the opposing team's pitchers in handling the bat. So I wouldn't have liked it.
Also, as a pitcher, how do you feel about this extra inning rule where they're going to have a runner on second? Full disclosure, I hate it. I don't like it. But I understand they're doing different things this year. But what are your thoughts on it?
Again, I think this is another one that people are going to have to view with an open mind, because this is another thing that baseball has been talking about doing for years. Look, as a player, I didn't love extra innings, obviously, but I'm not sure how I would have liked that. As a broadcaster, I'm all for anything to get the game over faster. I don't like 18-inning games. So from that standpoint, I'm a little bit more open-minded to it. But it's going to be interesting to see how it affects the game, or – or you know, what people's reaction is to it. I mean, look, baseball's been in this constant struggle of trying to, you know, find ways for the game to be offensive and interesting and at the same time faster. And it's a really hard formula to try and master, because obviously the more runs you're scoring, then the longer the games are going to take. And that's certainly been a big issue for baseball. The extra innings certainly don't, I don't think, help the interest in the game any. You know, it, for the purists, an extra inning ball game is exciting. For me, when I was a kid, if I went to a game, I wanted extra innings. It's like, hey, free baseball. This is great. I get to stay longer. But I think today, the makeup of today's fan is different. And, you know, they're not looking for the you know, 3.5 hour game or the 18 inning game. I mean, everybody now wants instant satisfaction and gratification. So I think if this helps to determine an outcome in the game sooner, then it's probably not a bad thing for baseball overall.
Tom, you are a two-time Cy Young winner, and we all know that over the course of a 162-game season, winning those individual awards, how difficult they are. It's a unique situation. We all know that. But how do you think they should recognize the individual performances this year, knowing that you're not playing the full season, so the Cy Young or whatever is going to – I don't know if you put an asterisk next to it or you just don't do it at all, but how do you think they should handle that?
You know, I mean, I think you handle it. I guess I'm of the mindset that you handle it like you always do. You know, everybody's playing under the same rules. So, you know, why delegitimize a guy who had the best year in a 60-game schedule? You know, that's the rules that everybody's playing under. So I don't see the need for an asterisk. Now, does it open the door for guys maybe to win those awards that probably otherwise wouldn't? Yeah, of course it does. Absolutely it does. You know, I had an interesting conversation with another radio station the other day, and this conversation kind of came up as it relates to the likelihood now of a relief pitcher winning a Cy Young Award. And you know what? It's probably more viable under this scenario, because your starting pitchers, if they get 12 starts, unless they've changed the rule that I'm not aware of, to where you still have to go five innings to qualify for a win, you got to figure starting pitchers are going to lose at least two opportunities to go at least five innings. So now you're down to 10 games. And what's the likelihood of a starting pitcher running out, you know, and getting an 8-2 or some kind of record like that? It's probably pretty slim. But the likelihood of a reliever getting more opportunities to go out there and save games is probably going to be higher. Their opportunities are probably going to be more. So you might see a guy go out and rip off 30 saves in a season. So I think those kind of scenarios are a little bit more likely. But again, I still feel like everybody's playing under the same rules. So whoever emerges as, you know, the Cy Young Award winner or the MVP under those rules, you know, they've earned it, because that's what everybody's playing under.
Tom Glavine with us. Tom, as we let you go, I know you always have a special part in your heart for the game of hockey and your background. I did want to ask, I don't think I've ever had a chance to ask you this. Tom Fitzgerald, as you know, was the first captain of the Predators, and we had many conversations with him back in the day about he was growing up. You're a couple years older than him, but he enjoyed watching you. He knew all about you growing up in the same town, Billerica, Mass. How well do you know Tom? Did you play with him at all growing up, or was he too young for you guys to cross paths much?
Yeah, no, he was too young. So, I mean, I obviously played against him a little bit and knew of him as, you know, I kind of got out of hockey, and obviously he was continuing on in high school and then college, and then ultimately on to professional hockey. So, you know, we got to know each other a little bit after that, a little bit better. And, you know, we talked from time to time. You know, he had a son at Boston College the same time I had, my daughter was at Boston College. So, you know, we would have that in common. And, you know, once he moved through his playing days and into the front office. You know, I would pick his brain a little bit here and there about some things. So, you know, I would say we've gotten to know each other more since I've gotten done playing hockey and kind of followed his hockey career. But, you know, great story. I mean, certainly a good player, a grinder, got a, you know, one of those guys that got everything out of his talent, but really, really did a nice job and made a good mark in the game of hockey in the front office.
Yeah, he's a great guy, and we're certainly hoping he gets the permanent GM job in New Jersey. That would be great for him. He's very deserving of it. So, Tom, thanks a lot for joining us, as always. Great insight, great talking baseball with you, and looking forward to later this month seeing some action.
Yeah, me too. I appreciate the time, guys, and have a good day.
Thanks, Tom. That's Tom Glavine, Hall of Fame left-hander. Of course, works with the Atlanta Braves as an analyst on Fox Sports South, so looking forward to watching his coverage. Fingers crossed, knock on wood, all of that. When we come back, are we just taking it to the top?
Well, we're just going to stay here. We'll just keep it
to the top. You know, what jumped out at me, Chase, I think he's dead on right. You know, now that I think about it, the chances are probably less than 50-50 that it'll be a starting pitcher that would win the Cy Young, right? You know, if you go 6-1 as a starting pitcher and have dominant stats, you know, that's not going to look as gaudy as somebody who racks up 20 saves in a 60-game season, right? Or as he said, in some cases you could maybe, in theory, on a really good team, you could get higher than that. But that's it does kind of have you lead – it kind of leads me to believe that it is much more likely going to be a game that's going to be dominated by the relief pitchers.
Yeah, I think so too. I hadn't thought about it that way because I was just looking at it as, okay, well, you know, if Mike Soroka, I'll use a Brave, you know, wins the Cy Young, I mean, you're always going to have to go with, yeah, but it was a 60-game season. But he makes a good point that, you know, relief pitchers are going to get more appearances and have a better chance at it. And I don't think that's a bad thing. And how he worded it was spot on. If under the rules, everybody's playing by the same rules, if somebody wins the award, then they've won the award. That's just kind of how you have to look at it. Now we're going to acknowledge that this season is unique, that it's a shorter season, and the reasons that it is a shorter season, you know, it's even though it's due to COVID, but we also know that they may have been able to get more games in if they could have you know, negotiated things, but you know, who knows? We'll never know at this point. But I think he makes good points there, and that stood out to me too.
And regardless of whether they win the Cy Young or not, I mean, it's not like relievers have never won a Cy Young before. It does happen from time to time. But when you start thinking about a 60-game season and some of your key relievers are going to be in over half the games, right, it's not going to be crazy to think that you could have two or three relievers on a team that have 35 appearances or more, you know, maybe upwards of 40 in some cases, probably not that many, but, you know, because you do have to face the three batters, right? It's not going to be, you know, a lefty coming in one time to face one hitter 40 times. But let's just say the number is 34 or 35. Think about the influence that the bullpen will have on the season. And it's not to say that the starters aren't important, but as Tom said, you're going to have guys that are working up the arm strength to go deep in a game anyway, and starters generally don't go deep to start with these days, right? So as he said, the first couple of starts, most of the starting pitchers are only going to be throwing three or four innings, and then once they get stretched out and can throw the six or seven innings, there's a lot of guys that can't last that long anyway. So the bullpens are going to have maybe even more of an emphasis given the fact that it's a short season. I hadn't thought about it until he was explaining that.
Yeah, and I just looked it up. I think this is correct. Is Eric Gagne the last reliever to win the Cy Young in 2003 with the Dodgers? Does that sound right to you?
The last reliever?
To win the Cy Young?
Does it really go back that far? I wouldn't have thought that off the top of my head, but maybe.
Now I think a coach with the Sounds, or he has been. But yeah, I know Dennis Eckersley was one, but
Raleigh Fingers, Willie Hernandez. There's been a few that have won it. Mark Davis won one going way back. But, yeah, I'm looking down the list to see if you're right. I don't see any other.
Yeah, it looks like it was Eric Gagne.
Eric Gagne. Wow.
Mark Davis. Mike Marshall. Yeah. So
there was a stretch there where there was a handful, but yeah, it has been a while.
Your Dodgers, Marquise. Eric Gagne. He was always interesting to watch.
Yeah, he was.
Definitely.
He was incredible when he was at his peak, for sure, but there was some reasons for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some reasons. We'll
find out later.
Your reasons that we should not discuss. We should just move on.
But I enjoyed that conversation with Tom Glavine, because he's and if you watch the game night that I did with him, it's actually been a couple months now, but did with him, and then you listen to that conversation. He's always very insightful, just as somebody that played the game for 20 plus years and has been involved with it for so long, that he can bring some insight that you should pay attention to.
Well, I was not surprised to hear his frustration with the lack of durability among the starting pitchers.
Yeah.
And it's not all the pitcher's fault. But he said it very distinctly. It's a combination of two things. Pitchers are not geared up. They're not conditioned as much these days to go deep into games. And, he used his childhood. I can tell you my experience. I'm younger than Tom Glavine, but I'm sure he experienced this on youth league teams when, back in the old system of youth baseball, you know, some youth league teams might only have three guys who even want to roll out there. You wouldn't want to go any deeper on your staff, right? So when you were pitching the whole game. There was no way that you were coming out of the game unless you were hurt, right? And
right.
So that conditions you to go deep in games. You expect to throw a complete game every time that you're pitching up through high school, right? And then college becomes a little tougher to do that, and then as you go up higher into the levels, it becomes tougher and tougher. But you're conditioned to pitch the whole game. Nowadays, it is different. Even at the youth level, you're at travel teams, you have an entire team that, you know, one of the ways you structure your team is you have a lot of pitchers, because you play in these tournaments where you're playing four or five games over the course of a weekend, sometimes even more. So you got to have a lot of depth, which is good because it protects the kids' arms. But you don't have the experience growing up of saying, okay, you're pitching today. And when I say you're pitching, Chase, that means you're pitching the whole game. We don't have anybody else, right? Our other pitcher pitched yesterday, so he's not available. So you got no help. There's nobody warming up in the bullpen. The other part of it, as Tom Glavine said, is analytics, right? The statistics show that the third time a pitcher goes through the lineup, A, he's probably getting a little fatigued, and B, when batters see you a couple of times, it's easier. The advantage starts swinging towards the batter. They see you more. They're more likely to get hit. So there are a lot of teams, and the Dodgers are one of them, Marquise, that they basically, unless it's Clayton Kershaw or Walker Buehler or the real elite guys, they are basically saying, you know, anything we get after two times through the order is basically a bonus from our pitcher. And they're designing their team to say, okay, you're going to go twice through the order if you're the starting pitcher. That could be five innings. Maybe it's six if you're breezing through. And then we're going to go to the bullpen after that.
Yeah, let's see how Dave Roberts manages this, because he's usually not known for managing bullpens pretty well. So we'll see.
Well, yeah, he got some heat of that, but that's how they've rolled, ever since he's been the manager. So it's not even – it goes above him, right? It's not even his choice. It's the people that are crunching the numbers saying this is the best way to win. And I can tell, that Tom Glavine doesn't like that. I'm with him, right? I think one of the great things about baseball is when you have a great pitcher's duel – and it's two guys that are going to battle. And, how am I going to get these guys out in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning? Steve Carlton against Tom Seaver, or, going back a ways, Roy Halladay. And, some guys that, you're excited when they're pitching. There's less of those guys now. There's still some, but there's less.
Yeah, that's always what worried me about Kershaw is it's usually that 6-7 window gap is when he starts showing like playoff Kershaw. So I'm a big component of him getting taken out of the game at least in the sixth inning so he can just rest. But sometimes Dave Roberts doesn't do that. He keeps him in an extra inning, and then next thing we get playoff Kershaw. and the rest is history. And then we don't win a World Series. So there you go.
Yeah, that's another. It's a whole other chapter, the playoff Kershaw, for sure.
But me and Chase talked about it on the rundown of basically how were the Dodgers going to set that up and how, like, a lot of teams were going to set that up of how many games does Walker Buehler play? How many games does Kershaw play? How many – you got David Price now. How many games is he going to play in this 60-game span? So that's what I'm going to be curious about to see, you know, is Walker Buehler's numbers going to be up in games? Is Kershaw's going to be down so they can save him for the playoffs? That's going to be the question surrounding the bullpens.
Yeah, I would imagine, as Tom said, you're probably not going to need to save him because you're only playing 2 months. But it's how quick can you ratchet up to being able to go deep into a game? But in theory, you know, you could have some really interesting postseasons where a pitcher is going to be relatively fresh when the postseason starts because they haven't pitched 200 innings, right? There's not going to be that wear and tear. So that'll be something to watch for. All right, when we come back, we'll start our final hour. Victor Arvidsson joined our staff yesterday. Pete Weber conducted a great interview with Victor. We're going to play that interview for you on the other side. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more of Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.